Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. It's the Quadno and Cadillac Friday. Jaguars Today closing out our week here. First week post-Super Bowl. It's a whole different feeling here. First post-Super Bowl week on Jaguars Today. It's a year of milestones here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. That, of course, Fat Tony across from me. David, how are you?
I'm great. I'm happy to be a part of some of the milestones.
Now, you're right. This is the first Friday, post-Super Bowl Friday show in the history of Jaguars Today. It's going to be epic. We know.
Epic.
Just like your beard.
Yes.
What's up with the beard?
I'm loving my winter beard. You know, when you're playing, when you're on TV, all those kind of things, I don't like to kind of come out of my normal look. But since I'm not really seen as much now,
right?
I'm letting it grow. I'm keeping it shaped up, but I'm letting it get some length to it.
Yeah, we're going to get a hidden webcam in here and not tell you about it. We'll let everybody get a good look. Somebody needs to get the memo to Andrew Luck, though, because that guy just does not care.
It does not look good under the neck.
No.
When it grows under the neck, you
shave it.
Yeah.
Tighten it up a little.
Yeah, you got to.
Kyle Orton was the front runner of that, but he's not that good, so nobody notices quite as much.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
My rocking neck beard.
Anytime you're rocking a neck beard, I mean, you probably shouldn't.
It's kind of like sweatpants, where they, you know, on Seinfeld, they basically declare that means you've given up on life. I've got a nice white pair of sweatpants, and I'm pretty sure there's a little scruff on my neck as well.
I got a lot of scruff on my neck.
I'm
right
a
now.
Double give up guy on Jaguars today. Today,
luckily we're on the radio.
Let me set up what we've got coming up today, and it's a bunch for you. Tony and I sat down with Greg Olson, the Jags' new offense coordinator. You'll hear that interview coming up in about 30 minutes here on Jaguars Today. Also, Doug Marrone, Kelly Skipper, Nathaniel Hackett, all these guys, new coaches to the offensive staff, met with the media yesterday. You'll hear some of the comments from some of those guys coming up. The way it timed out, we were in the little press conference room,
mm-hmm.
right? And they brought in Greg Olson first to talk to the broadcast media, and then he'd go in and talk with the print media. And at that time,
because we're not allowed to be in the room together,
right, because
there'd be a rumble.
There might be some. Now, you know what? You know what's funny?
It's
honestly
ridiculous.
Let me take you way inside the business here. Right? This started a few years ago.
Sharks and Jets going on.
This started before like the whole Twitter thing, right?
Yeah.
Where people could get their instant quotes out there, and
those print guys are sensitive.
So I was on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You used to come sit in with me, right? Tony and I, or whoever, Hacker, we'd go to a press conference, we'd come back, we'd cut up the sound, and so a reporter would ask a question during the press conference. Well, nobody's going to read their story till the next morning, right? It's old school. Well, and there are all the quotes on the afternoon. Well, so then they got a little uptight about it. So we need to be separated from these guys. We need to get our own quotes. So now they do their own thing. But it's funny, Tony. They'll sit in and listen to our portion of the press conference, and then somebody wants to go and shoot a little B-roll,
sure.
which is just background video of the print guys talking to a coach. Oh, no, that's verboten. You can't go in that room. It's an interesting standard.
It is interesting, and my reaction to it is what it's been the whole time. I don't care.
It's comical.
Right?
We talk to who we want to talk to. They're going to get on the air. And
all we want to do is get the information to the people, however it gets there. It's fine by me.
We're conveyors.
Who
for the
knew
people.
How much you guys had to deal with
it's
in this
such,
industry?
It's such
so difficult.
Man.
I you players think you got it bad.
Yeah,
you think this 2-day garbage is tough? Try 2 hours a day, pal. Right here. So we'll hear that conversation coming up. Also, we got Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net with the combine just a few weeks away.
Yeah,
I'm told Gus Bradley could pop in today.
Never know.
Oh, we just never know. And Gus is always welcome. The door. I told Gus. The second you walk in, it's your show. You can do whatever you like. You can come in every day for 2 hours if you choose to. I think people would be a lot happier with that than what we give them every day for 2 hours, certainly. But, Dave, we don't want to belabor the Super Bowl. Let's get a couple quick thoughts from you, particularly start with the way it ended. Do you think it was one of the most tragic calls in NFL history to throw it? Or, you know, just how did you see the last minute of that football game?
Well, first of all, I was going for Seattle. The play that Curse, I believe it was Curse, made on the ground, was it Curse? Yeah, that play, I mean, I just kind of thought, here we go again, David Tyree, now we got Curse. It's going to happen once again. And when I saw them in the shotgun on the half-yard line, first of all, that does bother me that nobody gets into that tight run formation and tries to pound it in anymore. But then they threw it, and I was like, oh, man. If it was complete, nobody would be upset about anything. I did want them to run Marshawn. I felt like he was still hot. I felt like he, you know, the whole game he was, you know, besides early in the game, he was running with some good power, with some good energy. You're down there. He's your guy. You know, feed him. But if the ball was complete to the wide receiver, nobody would be talking about this. They'd be talking about what a great play. The cat just arrived.
Tony, peer over your shoulder. Right
oh.
There.
Oh!
Is it Bud Adams
it's
or?
We should.
The
yeah.
Cat, the cat the waving. Cat. The cat's yeah. waving. That's all he's doing. Oh, I think Marshawn Lynch is now in the way. I got it. We're doing pantomime.
Yeah,
with
so he agrees with me that Marshawn should have got the ball there. So
right, he gave you a signal yeah. that Marshawn has been known to give, which is nice.
You know, so it was not probably the worst call in Super Bowl in NFL history. The way that it ended up makes it look that way.
In the age of talk radio, it must be the worst, absolute worst something. Or
no.
The best, absolute best something. That's the way
it was a great play. It was one of the great plays of
I thought
Super
Malcolm
Bowl.
Butler made a hell of a play.
Yeah.
I mean,
and somebody said the receiver wasn't going that strong to the ball. I mean, Malcolm Butler ran through that guy.
Like a Mack truck.
He wasn't expecting someone to run through him as hard as he did. And I think the great play about that play was the fact that he ran through the receiver, but he also held onto the ball. I mean, it's easy to run through that guy and break it up.
Right, and the ball just pops
yeah,
up.
Yeah, but right. to still catch the ball, I mean, and to not, you know, kind of fall in the end zone and he kind of caught it, got knocked back, but still had the sense to, you know, gain a yard or two to try to help with the kneel down, and then of course we all know what happened from there.
Right, they jumped off sides, it took any little bit of suspense
yeah.
that was in, and that look, there's going to be some fisticuffs in football. To me, Seattle.
I heard you earlier in the week talking about that.
I mean, look, they were so arrogant, Dave. Last
yeah.
week, and you know what? You lose, they got you. Okay,
yeah.
they got you, and you can point to your injuries. You can point to anything you like. Don't make it chippy in the last 20
well,
seconds.
Well, you know, I understand what you're saying. I heard Jeff's reaction to that, too. I understand Jeff's reaction a little bit more. I understand yours, too, but you're in that situation. It is a Super Bowl. You are on the half-yard line. You got a chance to get a safety, maybe get them to kick the ball off to you. So they're trying to do what they can. Then they get busted for it. It doesn't work out. And, yes, in your mind, you want to say, you know, just get up, walk away, and take the penalty. But it's like they can taste it, and it's
go swing on Michael Bennett.
Yeah,
he jumped off sides.
Yeah,
he's the one who cost you 5 yards.
Know.
Whatever.
I know.
No, that was a bully getting punched in the mouth. And I don't know if you heard this, but media days when we were out there, the difference in the room when New England and Seattle was in there was palpable. But I talked to Ricardo Lockett specifically,
yeah, the guy who got run through
right,
on that play,
and I asked him. You know, to close the interview, I was like, is there anything New England can do on defense that could give you guys problems on Sunday? And he thought for a second and he said, play with 13 guys. And that was the attitude of everybody on that
yeah.
team. You know, we are unbeatable. We're not going to get beaten. And to have the game in their hands that way and to have it taken away the way it was, they reacted like the big,
a little bit of karma there,
bully.
You know?
I get, look, you need to have a level of arrogance
yeah.
to succeed at that level. I truly believe you have to have that cockiness,
13.
Whatever, to some degree. But Ricardo
they took
Lockett,
it to another level.
Ricardo Lockett ain't exactly Jerry
and
Rice.
I was going to say, first of all, who is Ricardo Lockett?
Exactly. So you should have seen him last Tuesday. He was quite proud of himself. But regardless, quarterbacks coach, coordinator, right? There are a lot of cooks in this particular
yeah.
kitchen. Frank
yeah.
Selfo, who's the QB coach, remains on staff. Said to have a great relationship with Blake Bortles. In fact, we're going to try to have Frank on as a guest next week, as a matter of fact, and try to, you know, introduce you to some more of this coaching staff that you don't get to hear from all the time. But now you get Nathaniel Hackett, who was the OC in Buffalo. He's going to work directly with Blake Bortles. You've got Greg Olsen coming over, and he's going to oversee the offense. Who's the most, from a quarterback standpoint, for you, for Blake Bortles going into his second year,
who's more critical? Is it the guy who's going to orchestrate the big picture in Greg Olsen, or is it the guy working with him on a daily basis, honing his craft in Nathaniel Hackett?
It's definitely the quarterback coach, because you're there with him all day. You're on the practice field with him. He's breaking down everything to you. Now, there are times when the quarterback coach doesn't quite, like, he's new to the system, and so he's learning a lot, and so maybe the offensive coordinator will have to come in a little bit more often to kind of break it down for him and the quarterbacks. But once the quarterback coach has an understanding of the plays and what he's going over for that day, it's on him. It's on him to get it across to Blake and the rest of the guys, so that when they go out to the practice field, they have the understanding. He's also going to give them all the tools that they need for breaking down footwork, for releasing the ball, better timing, all those kind of things. That comes from the quarterback coach. And, yeah, the offensive coordinator will be around. He might be a little bit more involved than he's normally been before, but still, 100% of the time, the quarterback coach is there. And then probably another 25, 30% of the time, the offensive coordinator will step in, see what's going on, talk some things through if the guys have some questions over things, and try to make it things a little bit clearer. But it's definitely the quarterback coach. My one concern is there's another coach that might be involved too, so that's like three guys. I don't understand his situation.
Talking about Frank Selfo?
I guess.
He was the quarterback's coach last year, is now dubbed the senior offensive assistant.
Okay, he might float around a little bit too.
Right, late. And we're not. I don't think we're completely clear on what his role is going to be.
And if we have Gus in, we may ask him.
Right, and we will probably get an opportunity to talk with Frank Selfo. Well, I'm hoping next week on this score, if it works with the schedule. Believe it or not, these guys are actually in offensive meetings pretty much all morning, every day right now, between Greg Olsen, Hackett, Gus Bradley. These guys are really spending a lot of time poring over the tape, getting familiar with the personnel, obviously, that's returning. So we'll try to get a clearer sense of that.
And that's the one thing. When you have a new quarterback coach that comes in, he doesn't know the system that the coordinator's running. So they have to be in all these meetings so that when he comes in to give Blake the information, he's not stuck on things. He's not confused. I've been in quarterback rooms where our quarterback coach was new to the system, and he knew just a little bit more than we knew. And so it was tough at times, because we would have to call the coordinator in, and he'd have to break things down a little bit more. And that's tough for a young guy.
Well, and as one of the things Greg Olsen told us yesterday, and I can't remember if it was when we sat down with him or when we spoke with him in the larger press conference setting, was that the idea of a system, like, I'm going to come in, here's my system, in his opinion, most of the best guys come in and say, what do we have to work with?
Yeah.
How can I adapt my system to what
exactly
we have to work with? So we'll hear from Greg Olsen coming up about 20 minutes from now. Coming up next, though, you'll hear some of the comments from Doug Marrone, the new offensive line coach, former head coach in Buffalo, and Nathaniel Hackett, now the Jags' new quarterbacks coach, formerly Doug Marrone's OC in Buffalo. All that coming up. We've got David Garrard in the house. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Today, the 10th anniversary of the Super Bowl being played here in Jacksonville, Super Bowl 39. The Tom Bush Family Dealership's Fan Feedback Spotlight Question of the Day asks you to go back in the Wayback Machine 10 years ago. What's your favorite memory from Super Bowl week here in Jacksonville? Share those with us at MD_1010XL, at David Garrard 9, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and we'll get to some of your responses a little bit later on in the show. Friday's brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I met with the owner, Shad Khan, and his vision for what we want to do, and Dave Caldwell. A lot of times in the process, you don't get there. So having known Gus and what they're doing, the culture that they have here, what the staff has done before, what they've started, is exciting. And I've been a part of this quite a bit when you look back at my career. So for me, it's an exciting situation.
That's Doug Marrone, Jaguars' new offensive line coach. It's Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Tony, I was impressed with Doug Marrone, his demeanor and what he had to say. If I didn't know anything meeting him for the first time, I would have said, wow, it's a guy, seems like he's got it together. He knows what he's doing.
And clearly he knew enough to get himself a head coaching gig in the National Football League and then famously or infamously walked away from it. Not something you see very often. My point at the time, Dave, and it continues to be, I don't have an issue with him exercising the opt-out. You know, I have an issue with, if any issue, with you know, how he communicated that to his players, what message was he giving his players that we're all in this together, what have you. But you name a player that you could say you can void next year's contract, keep all the money, and go hit free agency. How many of them would be running to do just that very scenario? You know, so you see Doug Marrone. You just don't see it with a coach having that kind of ability. You don't see anybody having the ability to void their contract and still get paid like that. I think a lot of players would have done exactly what he did.
Yeah, I'm really confused at why that was even an option and why, you know, he would do it. Did he explain why he walked away?
We'll hear from that in a sec. It was an option because he had it written into his contract that if the team was sold, if ownership changed during his tenure, he'd have a three-day window at the end of the season. So, and I did ask him at one point, I said specifically, as a follow-up to another question, I said, explain to people, you got one of the 32 head coaching jobs in the National Football League. It's difficult for people to wrap their head around that you would walk away. How can you explain that decision to give up that position, not knowing what's coming next? And he basically said, look, there were a lot of private conversations that went on with me and my family on this issue. We had that window. We discussed it. He didn't want to get into the particulars of that. And that's his prerogative. You know, it's my prerogative to ask a question. He answered it the way he answered it. Let's start it. One of the questions that was asked to him early on, we'll just go in order here, was about Luke Jokel. And as much as there's been talk with Greg Olsen about Blake Bortles, Blake Bortles, Blake Bortles,
sure,
you're the O-line coach. What are you going to do about what do you see in Luke Jokel?
You know, we weren't in a position where we were looking to draft, you know, a left tackle. But I thought movement skills, foot speed, technique. I had known his line coach and worked with his line coach who he had at A&M. So I had a lot of good background on character, which is outstanding, which is always important. So we saw all those things that I think that obviously a lot of teams in the league were able to see, and I think that's why he was drafted so high.
Yeah, he was asked, you know, what were your impressions of him coming out of Texas A&M and what have you?
Yeah, when he was in Buffalo last year, but he said they weren't looking to draft a lineman but liked him coming out of school. Now we get to your question to him yesterday, Mike, and basically the way he got out of Buffalo, if there are players in that locker room who felt like he quit on them, how do you win a locker room in Jacksonville with those kind of things going on? He was asked about that situation.
I never looked at myself by title. Whether it be coordinator or by coach, I've always looked at myself as a coach, you know, someone that can take someone where they probably can't take themselves, not just on the field, but off the field as well. So, you know, even when I came down and, you know, during the interview process, I said, listen, I want to interview. I mean, I want to sit down. I want to go through, you know, the schemes and how we teach people and do those things. That's what I love.
Okay, I don't think that's the right answer that we're looking for. I don't think that's the answer to the question. He was talking about whether he sees himself as, is it difficult to make the adjustment from being a head coach to a position coach, a coordinator, what have you. Tyler, we're looking for the answer to the previous question right there, where, like Tony said, I said, look, there's been stories that your players feel like you quit on them. Is it more important for you coming into the situation to connect with the players in this locker room and explain to them the circumstances there's a perception that you quit?
It is perception, you know, that's out there. The coaches that we were with, the players, I don't agree that they feel that way. That was put out there. You know, I had an opportunity that was in the contract to opt out. My family and I made a decision to opt out. It brought us here.
That seemed like the quick answer right there. I don't think we're getting the answer that we want to get at Doug Marrone right now.
I got
it
now.
He's giving it. But I don't think we're getting it. Let's play the answer now, please, from Doug Marrone.
It is perception, you know, that's out there. The coaches that we were with, the players, I don't agree that they feel that way. That was put out there. You know, I had an opportunity that was in the contract to opt out. You know, Terry Pegula and Kim, I think, are going to be outstanding owners. I had two great years there. The people in the organization were outstanding, you know, to me and my family. My family and I made a decision to opt out. It brought us here. So for me, you know, when I look at it, you know, it was a decision that was made. But when people start putting in things like quit or things like that, that's not the case at all.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting. He had to know the question was coming at some point when he got here to Jacksonville about the way that he left Buffalo. He was also asked about just having missed being an offensive line coach in this league.
I never looked at myself by title, whether it be coordinators. I've always thought about this profession, and you get into it. It comes in, and a lot of people want to be a head football coach. And there's some great advantages of that. You're able to have a culture, a philosophy that you can put forth in a whole entire organization. But as you're doing that and you understand that, one of the things that we've all gotten into this industry for is we all started out as assistant coaches. And one of the things I know that I had missed as I was moving up was, you know, leaving that line room or leaving that offensive room. And it was always tough. And I had to manage myself quite a bit to stay away from, you know, those areas that you love. So for me, it's exciting.
All right, Doug Marrone talking about yesterday as well, just the offense in general and the importance as well, Dave, on limiting sacks. Young quarterback took, what, 71 last year?
71.
Here was Marrone's response.
You got to be a little bit careful, you know, with sacks and hits and things of that nature. You know, sometimes it's on the offensive line. There's no doubt about it. Sometimes, you know, it could be someone else breaking down in the protection mode. It could be from the routes. It could be from poor reads. There's a lot of things that go into that. So I think that what we're doing, you know, Greg and I and the rest of the staff, is we're really looking at this offense, trying to put together an offense, okay, which is ours, which is Jacksonville. It's not going to be Oakland's. It's not going to be Buffalo's. It's not going to be New Orleans. It's not going to be the Jets. It's not going to be any of our past. And try to build it overall so you don't have those things that are critical, you know, when you're playing football games.
Marrone also talked about the culture here in Jacksonville. And I think from the outside looking in, we feel it here every single day. That positive attitude, the way they carry themselves, Gus Bradley, Dave Caldwell, it all filters down from that. For the guys coming in from the outside, how real is the culture in this locker room?
Someone gets up here and they talk about culture and they talk about changing it and they talk about those things. And then all of a sudden you go in there and you're like, ugh, you know, this is not, you know, not what they're saying. Here with my conversations, you know, obviously with Gus prior to, you know, and then coming in here, that's the first thing you're trying to feel. You're like, hey, is it really like this? You know, and all of a sudden you're like, holy cow, I can't believe not only is it like this, it's all like this. And I think that's what's exciting.
All right, there's some of the thoughts from Doug Marrone. I mean, basically expressing, it's not like this everywhere you go around the league, you know? And look, in the end, all that's great. We all feel good. You and I love coming to work here every day. It truly is great. We saw Gus for a few minutes this morning. I mean, you feel good every time you see him, you know? He does give you that vibe. And all that's fantastic, but Dave, they got to win games, right? I mean, it's all that's wonderful, but unless the wins follow, it's all going to be for naught.
And that's what it boils down to. That's what the fans want to see. They don't get to come in here and see how happy it is over here. They don't care about that. They want to see production on the field, and you know, you can't just be happy-go-lucky all the time. You have to go win some ball games.
All right, let's hear a couple quick thoughts from Nathaniel Hackett, new Jaguars quarterbacks coach. He talked yesterday about the progression of Blake Bortles as a young quarterback.
Oh, gosh, I'll tell you, I mean, all the way back to the combine, I mean, he was definitely a guy that he stood out. Obviously, he's a very good player, and he's a guy, you know, just got to really kind of look back and watch the whole season of him and see how that's going to go and how we can develop him. I mean, I think that's the big key, is just letting him come along slowly but surely and get better and better every day.
Haven't met Nate yet. Looking forward to having the opportunity to do that next week.
We crossed paths in the hallway yesterday.
But I've heard he's a very energetic guy, maybe even more energetic than Gus Bradley, which is hard to believe.
They say it makes Gus look like a sad sack.
I heard that too.
But he was asked yesterday on what it means to be an energy guy.
Well, it means I'm really excited all the time, you know. And I love football. I love being around it, every aspect of it. It's the only thing I know. It's what I've been a part of my whole life, ever since I was born, you know. So I just think it's something you just, every day, you know, you kind of sit back and you realize, wow, I get to coach in the NFL. I get to work for a great organization with a bunch of great people. And that fires me up. I mean, just to be able to walk in a building like this and a stadium like this now, which is even cooler because now I get to come to the stadium every day. But, I mean, it's just about bringing that energy and making sure everybody around you, from you guys to the community to the players, is just fired up to be working and fired up to be working football and having fun.
Nathaniel Hackett going on, something we talked about a minute ago. You got so many guys that have worked with quarterbacks. they can be good, they can be bad, fresh ideas, but too many voices. How do you balance that out? He talked about just having a lot of coaches on the staff that have worked so much directly with QBs.
It's awesome. I mean, anytime you can get more people that understand that position, I mean, let's face it, it's the best position in all of sports, in my opinion, and it's very difficult to play, and the more people that you have involved in that position and the more thoughts that you have is unbelievable. I mean, it's going to help me grow and just become a better coach, and that's all I can do.
And it's something we talked about a moment ago with you too, David, just this idea of the offensive staff being on the same page with the offensive coordinator, and that's something Nathaniel Hackett talked about yesterday as well.
I think the main thing is to make sure, you know, it's all about Coach Olson. I want to make sure that I can fit into his realm and his system. I think that's super important. You know, being in his position before, working with quarterback coaches and so forth, you have to make sure that it's all one vision for the quarterback because you don't want to muddy that up. So for me right now, it's what have I done in the past that can fit to what he does, and I have to keep learning what he wants to do, because once we can get all that same on the same page, that's going to be the most critical thing for the quarterback, and it's fun. It's fun to learn the things that we've done the same, which kind of shows me that, hey, oh, this was right. And then it's sometimes fun to see things that are new, and you go, wow, why do you do this? And you get to ask questions, and the conversations are awesome because you're kind of talking the same language, and you all have the same goal to make him great.
All right, final thought here from Nathaniel Hackett, who, if his schedule works out, maybe on with Frank Frangie later on this afternoon. Not sure how the timing's going to work out with that or not. But Nathaniel Hackett talking about something, Dave, that we've talked a lot about, that jump you make from year one to year two, right? Particularly, maybe not even so much year one to year two as the first year you play to the next year you play significantly, right? That what that off season is like. He talked about that jump you want to see from a young quarterback.
It's one of those things. I mean, you lose the butterflies in your stomach. You all of a sudden realize, whoa, I can actually play in this league. So now you're going, okay, now I can really fine-tune myself. And especially a lot of the guys that are drafted real early, when they come out, I mean, they've got so many things on their plate. They're learning new systems. They're learning how to be a pro. They have all the rookie symposiums. They've got all these things. I mean, everything, their whole life has changed. And then when you go to that year two, now you get to step back. You get to have a full offseason. You get to train the way you want to train. You understand the things that you want to get better at. So that's really where that jump can increase even more, because you just have that pressure of the combine, the pressure of, ooh, I'm a rookie. Now it's okay, I'm a professional, and I can move forward and be a pro.
All right, for you, do you remember what that was like? Whether it was from your rookie season to your second season, maybe just being acclimated to the league, or from your first season as a starter or getting significant playing time when you filled in for Byron to the next time around, how much more comfortable did you feel?
Yeah, my rookie year it seemed like a blur. It seemed like it was hard to really fall back on what I learned because there was so much going on. I didn't even play most of the season, but it still seemed like a blur. But after my first year with Jack, I didn't even play that much that year. But when I got into my third season, I really felt like, okay, I understand the system. I understand the league. I understand the guys. I got to play in a few games that year. And I just felt like my maturity, my maturation, all that was just ascending, and I was heading in the right direction by that point.
Well, let's hope Blake Bortles takes a similar leap. But maturity-wise, all that stuff, he's got it in spades, but it doesn't matter. You come into the league, man, you can be the most mature guy in the world. Your head's spinning from everything they're throwing at you.
And honestly, the one thing that I worry about is the sacks, because when you have a number of sacks, I think about David Carr. He had so many sacks his rookie season, and he just was a shell of himself after that. I just don't want to see Blake go into the second season and start getting hit, and now all of a sudden he's thinking, man, I'm still getting hit. I got to worry about guys coming off the edge. I can't look down the field, keep my eyes on the field because I'm getting hit so much. So they really have to shore up that offensive line for him.
All right, coming up next, Tony and I had a chance to sit down with Jaguars' new offensive coordinator, Greg Olson, after the show yesterday. You'll hear that conversation next on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
When you want to hear the Jaguars, just listen.
One step up the mountain. You want to get that championship, you got to keep climbing. Let's go, Jags on three. One, two, three.
The flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. 1010. 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, joining us right now on Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. We've got the new offensive coordinator and back with the Jacksonville Jaguars, Greg Olsen. Greg, first of all, thanks for taking a few minutes. Is it good to be back in Jacksonville?
Great to be back. You know, like I said, I've made a lot of good friendships here when I was here before, and I see a lot of familiar faces in the building, and I'm excited about the energy and the passion and enthusiasm that I'm seeing with the Gus Bradley regime and Dave Caldwell, so I'm just real excited to be back.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question now that if you're not going to like me, it's going to start right here, okay? Fan reaction when you got hired was we had the 31st ranked offense in the league. Jed Fish got fired after a couple of years. They wanted better. You ran what happened to be statistically the 32nd ranked offense in the league. Despite the fact that we've heard, you know, great things about you, popular around the league, a great developer of young talent, to a lot of fans, that just is an illogical move that they made. How would you explain? Should we not get too hung up on the stats of this, or how would you address that concern by the fans?
Yeah, I think it's understandable, to be honest with you, just from the fan perspective. Certainly, we're all looking to win. We're all looking at statistics as a measuring sticks of for winning and losing or being successful or not successful. I take the opinions of my peers in coaching, and I think I've been put in some difficult situations. Some have been successful, some have not. I think if you look at the body of work and again the number of difficult situations that I've been placed in since I've been coaching in the league, and yet if you talk to some of the coaches that I've worked for, coaches I've worked with, and coaches that I've worked against, they would be the first people that would come to my defense and say, you know, this guy knows what he's doing. He, for the most part, he gets a lot more out of less. When they look at the teams that I've worked with or the players that I've worked with, he'll get the most out of those players. Has it always shown up in terms of wins and losses? No, it hasn't. But I think they've also said he's developed some players along the way. Had he been given more opportunity, there may have been a chance for him to get it going. So, I understand frustration at times. People looking at that and looking at the previous year's statistics as a measuring stick for whether we made the right choice or not. I don't take a lot of stock into it, I guess. Again, I know that the people that I have to answer to, the owner, the head coach, the players, more importantly, and the other coaches within the profession. I take a lot of pride in the work that I've done and the work that I've tried to get accomplished. And I've made a lot of good relationships and friendships with a lot of opposing coaches. And so, what I take great amount of pride in, and I take a great amount of pride that of the situations I've taken on, I feel like there's been some development within the players that I've had a chance to work with.
First of all, Greg, welcome back to Jacksonville.
Thanks.
It's good to have you back. Going back to 2012, when the coaching staff was getting turned over, new GM, new owner in place here in Jacksonville, did you ever have any conversations with Gus Bradley back then about staying on staff here in Jacksonville? What was that situation like?
There was. You know, I had the opportunity before Gus had been hired to interview for the coordinator's job in Oakland. So I had been offered that job, actually, before Gus had been hired. So there was some talk of that, of possibly staying. It didn't work out. There was a timeline I had to make a decision on. He wasn't ready to make the decision on whether or not to keep me or not. So, I was took the Oakland job, and I was happy moving forward with that. And I understand the business, and I know how the business works, and I understand, the timeline involved in that. That Gus wasn't ready, and he may not have hired me even if I had a chance to sit down with him and interview. So there was no ill feelings or anything like that. I know that, like I said, that's how it works. I think. Again, there's never any reason to burn any bridges when you leave a place, whether you felt like it was deserved or not. And I've never been that way. I was excited to go to Oakland. It was unfortunate that we didn't get turned around fast enough there. But I met a lot of good people out there. And again, I just feel fortunate that I got a chance to come back and be part of this process and part of this environment now that Shad and Gus and Dave Caldwell are developing here in the building. So I'm just really excited just to get back and There was some conversation at that time, but nothing ever came of it.
Jaguar offensive coordinator Greg Olson here with us. Let's talk Blake Bortles. That's what everybody wants to know about now. All right, you've got a young guy who we'll talk about his on-field development, but one thing that I think has struck everybody that's covered this team over the last year is the makeup, if you want to call it that, the ability to conduct himself as the face of the franchise, that he is a more mature guy, can handle a lot of the other aspects. The play has to match that as well. But one thing that struck us about Blake this season, Blake told us at one point, "I'm killing us," right? I mean, he was strong enough to go out there and say, I'm not playing very well right now. How important is that for a young quarterback? You've coached a lot of young quarterbacks to be able to take that responsibility and be able to self-critique himself as part of the process.
Yeah, I think it's a huge part of the developmental phase of that position, and it's a quarterback's is a position of leadership, and for him to take that on himself, I think shows that here's a guy that's a leader by nature. He's not a guy that's going to place blame on others. He's going to put it on his shoulders, and he's going to be determined to make sure that it doesn't continue to happen in the future. So I think that's part of understanding the responsibility of playing the position of quarterback in the National Football League. So I'm excited about that part of it.
You were part of the staff in Oakland last year. Obviously, you guys were looking for a quarterback. What were your conversations like with Blake Bortles leading up to the draft last year? Was he a consideration for you guys in the first round if he hadn't gone to Jacksonville at number three?
He was a guy that we had rated very highly. So he certainly would have been in a conversation for that pick. Again, had good conversations with them. Everything was real, real positive from our end, from the Oakland Raiders organization. It was a positive interview and a positive part of the evaluation process. So he definitely would have been part of the conversation.
You can't work with him hands-on now for a little bit of time. Frustrating for you? I mean, do you want to get going right now?
Yeah, I just, I don't know if those rules were put in place in the CBA with the idea of development of young players in mind, and I think that's the guys that are getting shortchanged are the young players in the league. I think certainly with veteran players that have been in the league for a long time, they know the expectations, or they've been within a system, they understand different systems because they've played for maybe a number of different places, or if they were fortunate enough to stay in the same organization, they don't need that extra time as much as the young players do. So I think it's unfortunate the way the rules have changed, and specifically in regards to the development of young players, but that's the way it is. It's that way for everybody. The rules are the same for everybody. So we'll make sure that when we do get a chance to work with Blake, that we'll be ready to go and he'll be ready to go as well.
When you spoke with all the media talking about Blake, I know you mentioned specifically a couple positive things, including how calm he is in the pocket for a young quarterback. When you look at what he did in his first year, what are some of the things you're looking forward to working with him on to improve on going into his second year?
I just think to me, his first year in the league, and the fundamental part of passing the football a little bit, I think he can get better there, and that's in that regards. I think we can clean up his fundamentals somewhat, which I take a great amount of pride in. I also think the whole mental part, aspect part of protections and making sure that he has full knowledge of protections, and I think that's critical in the development of a young quarterback.
As far as Blake goes, there was a point last year he was probably throwing about a one TD to every two interceptions, right? You want your quarterbacks to be aggressive. You don't want them to play scared, obviously. How tough is it to find that balancing point between playing smart and playing overly conservative?
Certainly there's a balancing part, but everyone's got to understand it doesn't always fall on the quarterback, and certainly they're going to take their share of responsibility for it. But we'll continue to help Blake develop in that way. It's real encouraging to me that he does have an aggressive mindset. We don't want to take that away from it. We don't want him to play conservative. We want him to be fearless. We don't want him to be reckless with the football. But we can help him in that regards, but by shoring up some of the other areas on offense that are out of his control. But if we can just get him to continue to play with the confidence and the swagger, continue to keep that swagger, and we'll continue to build the team around you, then I think it's going to be a really good growth process for Blake going forward.
A lot of young pieces on this offense. offense outside of Blake Bortles, including especially the wide receiver position, with three rookies they relied heavily upon last year. What have you seen out of those guys early on in your evaluation that you like, and maybe, again, some of those things that you want to develop?
You know, I think they're all athletic. Marquise Lee, was a tremendous player coming out of high school, and he didn't disappoint in the college game. So there's a number of guys there. They all have different set of skills, which will be fun to work with and fun to develop them as well, and to find exactly what, again, as we're moving forward, what their best strengths are, what position they're best suited to play, and we'll continue to evaluate that and look at that here as an offensive staff as we're moving forward. But I know as a staff, we're real excited about the young players that we have to work with here.
Well, we're excited to see this young core develop. We hope that you get the best out of these guys as quickly as possible. Welcome back, as we said, to Jacksonville, Greg, and best of luck. We're rooting for you to do. I hope next year, my first question to you when we sit down next year is, how did you become a top five offense that quickly?
Absolutely.
That's phenomenal. But seriously, best of luck throughout the process, getting settled in, the whole nine yards, and we look forward to talking to you down the road.
I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
All right, if you missed any with Greg Olson there, you can always catch it on 1010XL.com on demand. And I thought, Tony, I feel like I've been the bad guy the last couple of days, but I feel like some of these questions, let's get these out of the way.
Yeah.
The fans, what is the overwhelming reaction when they hired Greg Olson? How do you go from number 31 ranked offense to number 32 ranked coordinator and consider that an upgrade? So let him put it in his own words. And I think he did a pretty good job. He didn't seem defensive to me, but he gave a good defense of his resume. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he wasn't like, but he said, look, here are the circumstances I've been in. I think I've done some good work. At times I haven't. You know, that's the life of a coach in the NFL. And one thing that strikes me, Dave, is that the people we spoke with in Arizona, it's kind of the NFL convention, most of them speak very highly of Greg Olson as an offensive mind and a developer of young talent. So whatever the numbers were last year, if he can do something with Blake, numbers from last year can be damned.
You know, to me, it's really all about the players. Coaches can call plays. If you have players that can go out there and execute the play, make it happen, if you see somebody like Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, those guys going out there just making plays, for whatever reason. But if you have, if they have guys to throw to, if they have guys to protect them, then it didn't matter. The coordinator can call whatever play he wants, and if they go out there and execute it, they can make him look really, really good.
All right, let's take a quick timeout. We'll come back to Dayton football history, the Honda drive around the NFL, and more, including coming up in about 25 minutes or so. Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net will take an early look at some of the players who may be throwing and running and jumping at the combine coming up. It'll be here before you know it. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
On this date in football history, February 6, 2015. Donna Murphy just did an update on Jaguars today.
Welcome back, Donna.
Murph is classing up the joint today. This state in football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Also, February 6, 1926, the NFL adopts a rule that made players ineligible for competition until their college class graduated. Since been amended, now you have to be 3 years removed from when your high school class graduated to be eligible to be drafted into the National Football League. As we said earlier, 10-year anniversary of Super Bowl 39 being played right here in the beautiful River City. New England Patriots defeat the Philadelphia Eagles 24-21 in that one. You remember the MVP that year, Tony?
Deion Branch.
Deion Branch, which coincidentally enough, leading up to it, back on the old station. Are they still around? I'm not sure. Anyway, he was the only Patriot we got on live that week, and I'd like to think that was what led him, Dave, to winning Super Bowl MVP.
I played against him in college, too, when he was at Louisville.
He had 21 catches in back-to-back Super Bowls. That's pretty good.
That's really good.
It was ridiculously good. He had 11 in that game, won Super Bowl MVP. I thought Rodney Harrison certainly had a shot at winning Super Bowl MVP in that game as well. Played great as the Patriots picked up what at the time was their third in 4 years,
yes.
I believe, right? That was the third one.
I honestly had a lot of fun that Super Bowl week. I thought Jacksonville did a great job of putting Super Bowl on. I mean,
you know what? We'll talk about it at the end, because today's question of the day is, what's your favorite memory from that week? Other than the logistics of getting around at times, traffic was pretty daunting. I thought Jacksonville did a great week as well, or had a great week as well, but, media people just remember when they were stuck in a cab for 20 minutes. And that's and they're the ones who write the story. Also, this date in 2000, NFL Pro Bowl record for most points scored in a game, the NFC defeating the AFC 51-31 in that game. They think no defense is played now. Are you kidding me? This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway, 620-9225, the number, or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers is already setting goals for 2015, or at least one goal, and that is to be number one. The number one seed, that is, in the NFC. In his weekly interview with ESPN Milwaukee, Rodgers said that he looked back on the season, and if he and the Packers had been able to go just 5-3 on the road this year, then they would have had home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs, and that, of course, means that if they were going to play the Seahawks in the NFC Championship game, it would have been at Lambeau Field instead of in Seattle. Although I still don't think that the big reason that they gave up that 19-7 lead late in that game is because of the field they happen to be playing on. Looking around the AFC South, the Houston Texans are, like everyone else, trying to put together their offseason plan. The biggest question, the quarterback position. The Texans played four different players at QB last year: Ryan Fitzpatrick, Ryan Mallett, Tom Savage, and Case Keenum. Texans head coach Bill O'Brien said yesterday that the team is evaluating their options from on and off the roster for 2015 and beyond. And the Miami Dolphins, we talked about this a moment ago, but the Miami Dolphins putting in new living room seating in their renovation down at their stadium. Essentially, it'll be seating for four, where you have chairs, couches, kind of like you would at your house, and a TV in front of you. You have the option of getting one or four televisions in your booth so that you can watch either the Red Zone channel, I would assume, or four different games at once, or three games in the Red Zone. They're going to be $75,000 a year for season tickets in that area.
Not too shabby. I think it's 75 for the whole room, right, based on a four-person occupancy. So you split that up. It's not much, Dave. So,
I'm confused. I don't understand why you don't just stay at home and watch the
Well, TV. There's that. Don't, shh.
That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Oh, we could just stay home and not pay for parking and do all these other things.
Don't you go to the game to be a part of the atmosphere?
I guess you have the option if you choose to look out your living room window and, hey, there's a game being played out here. I don't know. I don't know why anyone would pay that much just to have what you already have.
Sounds a little bit sad to me.
It's still the NFL trying to figure it out, too. I mean, with the attendance numbers keep going down in the league. So if they're going to keep going down, they have to figure out some way to integrate. Everyone wants to know what their fantasy football team is doing, even when they're at the stadium. That's why Shad Khan and these guys have been upgrading the Wi-Fi in the stadium.
Yeah, I love that.
That's why the Red Zone is on.
Love that, too.
On those corner TVs when it's here in town. They're trying to figure out some way to give the fans everything that they want when they come to the stadium. And on top of that, give them that game day experience, which I agree with you, is fantastic, especially here in Jacksonville. But everybody's trying to figure out what the right mix is. I'm curious to see how this works for Miami.
I'm curious to see how it's going to work for Jacksonville, because one of the things Shad Khan told me last week was that they are definitely upgrading the suite level seating here. It's probably not going to really go into effect until 2016, but how extravagant is it going to be? Shad wants to have the best of the best, right? He wants the best of everything. You talking about it, the practice bubble last week. He's so proud of this vision of this high-tech, you know, Thunderdome he's going to drop on the First Coast. And, you know, he's got the biggest scoreboards. He's got the biggest yacht. He's got the biggest and best
everything. I love all that. But just having your own private room where you go and tuck in and watch TVs.
Make it like Skydome. Yeah. Maybe you can live here, right? Make it like a little mini hotel, a row of hotels. You can live, you can wake up every morning.
It could be a residence.
Overlooking,
I like that.
It'll be a bonus, you know, when they play the Gator Bowl here or the Tax Slayer Bowl as it is now. You get to stay because you live here. You
they could build little flats around the stadium.
Sure, you could build a whole little tent city if you want to, maybe in the south end zone. They did a lot of things you could do.
I love it. I love that.
It's getting bigger and better. Miami, by the way, thinks they will sell out. What else are they going to say? Hey, we don't think we're going to sell out.
You got this idea, and the early returns are bad.
But, I mean, Miami's strong because nobody goes.
Nobody goes to the games. You're right.
You see shots, and they're very careful. They try to give you that low angle shot, right? They don't want to advertise. But when you do see pictures that people tweet out, Miami has as many empty seats as anybody in the National Football League.
Yeah, and I don't even think if they were, like, winning and playoffs every year, I still think they would have low attendance records just because there's so much going on down there. The it's always sunny. There's a awesome beach. There's events going on that, you know, people don't even know there's a football team there in town. And it's such an international city that people just don't know. They come in expecting to play soccer and oh, they have a football team too. You know, it's just, there's just so much going on down there that it's hard for people to just be diehard Dolphin fans and want to go to the games all the time.
Yeah, it's the Dolphins. I would think it is be extremely hard for anyone to be a diehard fan of that franchise. All right, moving along, Combine's coming up shortly. That's the next major event on the NFL calendar. We'll spend a few minutes talking with Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net. That's up next. It is a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday, by the way, since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. They've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville and absolutely no dealer fees. So the only Cadillac dealer here in North Florida selling and servicing the ELR. With an on-site body shop that'll paint and repair any Cadillac model, Claude Nolan Cadillac is guaranteed to offer you the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac one step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. Back with Tony Pauline, DraftInsider.net, Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Break the huddle, man!
Jaguar coaches, Jaguar players, Jaguar experts, live from EverBank Field. So yeah, you're in the right spot. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, coming back here at Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you. NFL Scouting Combine. Just a couple weeks away. That's the next major event on the calendar, and one of the best guys in the business when it comes to covering the NFL draft and the lead up to it, Tony Pauline, formerly with Sports Illustrated, TFY, draft.com, draftinsider.net. It's all the same site. He does a terrific job, and he joins us here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm okay, Mike. Nice to be back with you. You know, last time I was on the phone with you, I was in Florida. It was 95 degrees. I'm sitting in New York right now, and it's about 5 degrees out when I went out for my run this morning. So talk about night and day as far as the weather's concerned anyway.
So we average like 45 degrees every time
you come
out,
is
what you're saying, which is about what it was in Jacksonville this morning.
It's
around
50,
so perfect timing, Tony. Tony, let me ask you, when it comes to the combine, we hear every year, oh, somebody's got to throw. He's got to show he's a competitor. How much is it really held against guys in the long run if they bounce back and have a good pro day on their campus or a good individual workout with a team, whether they're a QB or not, if they don't do everything at the combine? Are there really negative effects on their draft status?
I think it's more positive for the guys who throw. Remember, Blake Bortles threw at the combine last year. Johnny right. Manziel and a lot of those other guys didn't throw at the combine. Is it held against the guys? I think that if you go to the combine and you're a quarterback and you throw and you do a reasonable job of it, that's really more points in your favor. Because the fact is, this is, you know, especially when it comes to the quarterback position, these guys are throwing in a foreign environment. None of them have really been in Lucas Oil Stadium before, spectators, never mind on the field. And they're throwing to receivers that are virtually strangers to them. I mean, they may have met them a couple days earlier, but they sure as heck haven't practiced with them, you know, 2 and 3 years. Which is the luxury of throwing at a pro day. So I think that quarterback who goes to the combine and throws, it's to his advantage. I don't know that it's a huge disadvantage for those who may not throw.
Tony, hey, it's David Garrard here.
Good to see you. Good to hear from you, David. I remember your days here with the Jets.
Awesome, awesome. I have a question. I would like to know, how does a guy rise and fall so much from the time when he finishes his last game up until pro day and all that? How do they climb so fast, and how do they make a name after they finish playing? That always confused me, why people aren't taking more stock on actual game footage when guys are rising more from, you know, throwing in T-shirts.
Well, you know, Dave, if you find the answer out, let me know, because I've had that same question for years. I think what happens is this is, all of a sudden when the Super Bowl's over, you get a lot of people involved in the draft who don't follow the draft, you know, year round. This is the way I do. So all of a sudden you'll see Marcus Mariota go from the first pick of the draft to the sixth pick of the draft. And to me, I agree with it. It's insane. I mean, it's as insane where a guy's basically preparing for the combine and he watches his draft stock fall. as it is to say with Marcus Mariota, you hinge his draft grade on one single game. He didn't play well against Ohio State. Oh my gosh, the world is coming, you know, is crashing down upon us. Marcus Mariota is not the best quarterback in the draft. So, you know, I would agree with that. I think what happens is the draft is such a big event now, and everybody wants to throw their two cents in. And a lot of times people, rather than just report the news, tend to create the news to get some sort of stir or buzz out there.
With that being said, Tony, what happens in the evaluation process we're going through here for you personally? You take a look at the film you have of these guys, and they get into the offseason, you start breaking down whatever you saw in their college career. What do they do during this time of the year that it can impact your rankings or feelings about a player?
Well, obviously, you want to see what type of athlete they are. You know, are they good athletes? Are they fast? Can they jump high? That, you know, all things being equal, mental capacity, the ability, you know, the willingness to work, to do the extra things, the good athlete's going to win out 99% of the time. So you want to see if the guy's a good athlete. Obviously, there are the off-the-field issues that start to come to the forefront. Now, the other thing is one of the important things of events like the Senior Bowl and the Combine is the players, and David will know this, the players are going to start to be asked to do things, what they're going to have to do on Sundays. The quarterbacks are not going to be able to make those, some of the dinky passes that they made on the college level. All of a sudden now they got to make NFL-type throws. They got to throw the outs, and they got to throw the outs with speed, with timing, with accuracy. You know, the defensive line, the offensive linemen have to play with good technique. It's not like, you know, set your feet and get comfortable. You got to bend your knees. You got to set with a wide base. You got to get your hands up. So you're looking more and more now towards NFL techniques, and if they didn't have NFL techniques in college or make NFL throws in college, you know, run NFL routes in college, how do they do it when they're asked to at things like the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, or Pro Day workouts?
What about Mariota, Tony? I mean, in terms of doing those pro-type things, I think that's the one question. Can he throw from the pocket and make the NFL-type throws that he needs to? I know you guys at DraftInsider.net rank him as the number one quarterback in this class. Do you have questions about whether he can do that?
No, not at all. In fact, I think that's one of the reasons why he went back to school this year. If he had entered the 2014 draft, in my opinion, he's probably the first quarterback taken before Bortles, probably playing with the Jacksonville Jaguars right now. But he went back to school in part to become a better passer from the quarter, from the pocket, from behind the line of scrimmage, and to improve his game. You know, what he's going to have to learn to do is, you know, have everything in tight, have one and two tight ends in tight, that line up next to the tackle, have a fullback in front of the running back on a consistent basis, which he did not have at Oregon. Sometimes, and again, David can answer this better than I, when all of a sudden everything's spread out and you pull it in tight, all of a sudden it's a strange sort of atmosphere for the quarterback. I think that'll be the biggest hurdle for Mariota. But when you look at him from a character point of view, when you look at him from a personal point of view, just from what's going on between the ears, in my opinion, he's a guy that gets it, and it should be a seamless transition.
Tony, this is Dave again. I really do believe everything that you're saying about Mariota is very true. My one concern for him, just being a quarterback, is, like you said, everything has been spread for him. He's run a system offense where, you know, it's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of, not trickery, but a lot of disguise and trying to get guys open that way, as opposed to just full-field packages where he's reading the defense and the defense is taking him to the open guy. So in my mind, that's my one concern for him. When I see somebody like Jameis Winston, of course, my concern for him is just his off-the-field stuff, the way he is, the way he handles himself off the field, and a team trying to bring him in as a number one quarterback. Are these some of the same kind of concerns that you have for both of these guys when you look at both of them?
To an extent. The thing with Mariota that I like is he's got a very good body of work, a successful body of work, and he's really improved every year. The fact is if you pull Mariota off the Oregon, out of that Oregon offense, and you slide another quarterback in, I don't think that the Oregon Ducks are as successful as they've been under Mariota. So, you know, there may be some bumps in the road. I don't think he is as NFL ready as some of the recent quarterbacks that have come into the draft. He's definitely not Andrew Luck, but he's got a tremendous amount of upside. So there may be some bumps in the road, but again, you look at the type of person he is, his work ethic, the fact that he could have come out last year and taken the money around, but he decided to go back and really become a better quarterback. There was even thinking about returning to school this year. There was some question about that. So I think everything bodes well. As far as Winston's concerned, I'm also a little bit concerned about the mechanics. I don't see a guy who consistently throws with good footwork. He's often high of the mark. He's stepping out of throws, throwing off his back foot. Made some bad decisions last year as a junior. And my big concern, I agree with you about the off-the-field issue, is I think Jameis Winston was a better quarterback in 2013 than he was in 2014. And it's always a concern when a quarterback enters the draft off of a bad season. Matt Barkley, we could go on and name others, as opposed to, say, Mariota, who, where it's really, except for that last game of against Ohio State, has been a constant moving north, a constant upswing in his game and his performance.
So you like Mariota as your number one quarterback this year. Jameis, I'm assuming, would be your number two. And where would you slot Blake Bortles among those three guys, just in your evaluation coming into it?
Probably, I would say, right in the middle. I would put him behind Mariota, but ahead of Jameis Winston. I think Winston is physically better than Blake Bortles, though that's not to impugn Bortles, because he had some great physical skills. But I think when you just the maturity level, the ability to run a pro offense, the ability to make decisions at the line of scrimmage, his reads, his decision making, I think Blake Bortles is significantly far advanced compared to Jameis Winston.
Tony Pauline here with us, draftinsider.net. I don't know. We'll move off the QBs after this. I don't know how much this will impact his stock, but I got a chance to talk with Brett Hundley last week in Phoenix, Tony, and I don't know if you've ever spoken to him personally. This guy comes across. He's a look you right in the eye, super intelligent. I mean, you could picture him fronting your franchise, and that was one of the big selling points with Blake, is that he's got all the intangibles. He's got all the things you want in a franchise quarterback. How much does that bump you up, or does it still come down to whether or not you can sling the rock the way you're supposed to?
I think it's going to help him, as opposed to, say, someone who doesn't come across that way. Comes across as someone who may be too passive or not interested in being a team leader or the face of the franchise. But it's going to come down to the film. And Hundley's film is not very good. I mean, he could be a world leader. You know, he could speak at the UN. But the fact of the matter is when you watch the film, he's indecisive. He's slow to pull the trigger. He doesn't always read the defense properly. His accuracy is questionable. He's making wide-open receivers work to make the reception, which leads to a loss of opportunity running after the catch. So, you know, while all that's nice, when you watch the film, you got to wonder, you know, how much work is it going to take before Hundley is really ready to be a productive quarterback in the NFL?
Tony, a lot of Jaguars fans getting away from the quarterback position because they're not drafting one.
They're like, what are you doing?
We don't have to worry about it here in Jacksonville. But what they are salivating over is the prospect of potentially a guy like Leonard Williams coming to Jacksonville with all the things that he can do on that defensive line. Just talk a little bit about your evaluation of Williams and looking at Jacksonville, comparing their need for a guy like Williams to a guy like Gregory, who would be more that rush end on the other side.
Well, I mean, Williams really impressed me. He's always had the physical skills, and he's always been able to dominate games. I think his intensity, his competition, his willingness to play with injury, to play through injury, you know, to come up big in the early part of the season when he had that ankle injury, I think that is what impressed me. And I wrote as much that I thought that scouts were going to look at that film. You know, he wasn't just a physically talented guy who was able to dominate the opposition. He was a guy who, you know, seemed to love to play football. You know, going back to what you said about Brett Hundley at the quarterback position, you know, Williams seems to have that fire. And when you're talking about college defensive linemen, you know, sometimes these guys are able to just get over because they're so much physically gifted than the other. They're so much better off as far as athletically is concerned. Williams seemed to combine that athletic gifts with the fire, with the intensity this year, which I think really boosted his stock. As far as Randy Gregory, I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are in a very good situation. You know, we're talking about Randy Gregory, they need a lot of help on the offense, too. You got to protect Blake Bortles. Whether they do that in free agency, whether they do that in the draft, oftentimes, and I looked at it, it's kind of mindless to say teams should trade down. But I think the Jaguars would actually be in a very good spot to potentially trade down if Leonard Williams is there, if one of the quarterbacks is there, if a team wants to move up, you know, and get one of those players, the Jaguars could potentially move down. There are a lot of good pass rushers in this year's draft. Everyone talked about Randy Gregory, understandably so. You got Dante Fowler of Florida, who's there, Shane Ray of Missouri, Alvin Dupree of Kentucky. I mean, these guys can all get up the field and create havoc and disrupt the action. So if the Jaguars find themselves where they can trade down, maybe get one of those guys, get a running back in the second round or another offensive lineman, I think that's really the way to go.
Tony, linebacker is a position the Jags need to shore up as well. They've got an aging Paul Posluszny in the middle. They've got a rising young guy in Telvin Smith. They need somebody to play the auto position and maybe an eventual replacement for Posluszny as well. I got a lot of questions about Mississippi State's Menardrick McKinney. Tell us about him, and is he scheme versatile? In other words, is he strictly a middle linebacker in a 4-3, or where do you see him projecting best in the NFL?
I actually like him on the outside because, I watched McKinney and I watched him on as a redshirt freshman when he played on the outside. And I said back then, I wrote back then, this guy's going to be a dominant defensive, the dominant linebacker, a first round pick. When they moved him inside, he was sort of out of position. I just finished my Mississippi State film and, you know, he's not flashy, but he can be dominant. He forces the action. He's very good up the field. He also can drop off the line into pass coverage. He gets good depth on his pass drops. Doesn't just play smart, tough, explosive football. Also plays relatively instinctive football. Doesn't mindlessly rush up the field. Doesn't get caught out of position. So I think he is developing into the total package. Now, that said, you know, when did the Jaguars take him? I mean, he's probably a second half of round one guy. So you're not going to take him with the third pick. You're going to have to trade down. If you trade down, you have to trade down, you know, into that middle part of round one to take him, or you're going to have to hope that he's there for you at the top of round two, and I don't know that that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's what the hope is, that people have said, hey, if he is there, how much do you like this guy? From everything I hear, including from yourself right now, it seems like that would be a slam dunk. That may not be the best guy on the board, but he certainly would be worthy of a pick in that range.
And he's a three-down defender. He's a three-down defender. He's not just a guy who's good against the run. He's a guy that on third and five, you leave him on the field, even if you just put two linebackers on the field, because he's not a liability in coverage. And if they try and run some option play or run a running back around the edge, you know, he can get out to the perimeter and make the stop. So he's got a lot going for him. But again, I think it's just a process where they got to find a position that's comfortable. I like him on the outside and just be patient with him.
I see Brandon Scherff as the top-rated lineman in this draft. A lot of people saying he may wind up playing guard in this league. How high is too high for teams to start considering drafting a guy like Scherff?
Yeah, I don't think there is a top any of the offensive linemen. I agree, Scherff is my number one-rated lineman. I don't know if he's going to be a guard. I think he can play either left or right tackle. But I think after those top four picks, considering the fact that you've got the two quarterbacks up there, you got Leonard Williams, you're going to have one, you know, maybe Randy Gregory. I think after those top four picks, when you get to pick five, is when the offensive lineman Brandon Scherff and Pete of Stanford start to come into the conversation.
All right, one more for you here, Tony. We know this team needs a free safety, and they'd like to probably address that in free agency if they can, but there aren't a lot of great ones out there. If Devin McCourty gets franchise or re-ups with New England, that takes the top target off the board. So I'll ask you from a collegiate perspective, how deep is this class of free safeties? Are there guys in this class that you think could come in and contribute right away?
Well, they can contribute, but I don't know that they're going to contribute as starters. I mean, you got Landon Collins at the top, and to be honest with you, I think he's being overrated by players. You saw Mark Barron a few years ago, how early he went, and they basically traded him for a pack of smokes last season. So, again, unless it's a Roy Williams dominant type of safety, there's nothing like that. I see a lot of, you know, nickel safeties in this draft. I don't see any. I see guys who could maybe develop into starters, but I don't see any safety from the class of 2015 that's going to be a starter from day one or an impactful starter from day one.
Before we let you go, Tony, obviously Jaguars fans listening, we got the number three pick here in Jacksonville. A lot of early projections had quarterback one and two. Like we said earlier, a lot of the fans would love to see Leonard Williams in a Jaguars jersey when everything is said and done. What is your sense of what's going to happen with those first two picks in the draft right now? I know we're still a ways away, but at this point, early February, do you get the sense that it could go quarterback, or is that a bit of a pipe dream?
No, I think it's a definite possibility. You know, Tennessee kind of They like Zach Mettenberger. They like him a lot, but then he was injured at the end of the season and he wasn't able to finish it out, so they don't really know what they have on their hands. I think Tennessee is a team that could look to trade down, you know, if they still feel Mettenberger is their guy moving forward. Right now, the sense is that I'm getting from people is going to be quarterback, quarterback. Like you said, it could change, and it's going to change depending on Tennessee's feeling towards Mettenberger. And, you know, we don't know because he wasn't able to finish out the season. They like him a lot, but they kind of got shortchanged with his inability to play those last six games or whatever it was.
He is Tony Pauline. DraftInsider.net is the website. TFYDraft.com gets you there as well. He's been doing it as well as anybody for a long time in this Draft Nick business. Tony, stay warm up there in the New York area, and we'll look forward to catching up with you several more times before the draft rolls around.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you got it. Tony Pauline, one of the best in the business, brought to you today by our friends at Foundation Professionals of Florida. Is your home's foundation letting you down? Well, your home's your greatest investment. You need to protect it, and the engineers and specialists at Foundation Professionals of Florida, they are your full-service foundation repair company. They can do just that. They'll give you the peace of mind that your home is safe, and they'll also work with your insurance company, and financing is available. Licensed and insured, of course. Call 287-2690 or visit foundationprosfl.com. Question of the day today is, what's your favorite memory from Super Bowl 39? The week leading up to and the game itself here, it's the 10-year anniversary of the Super Bowl being played in Jacksonville, Florida. Maybe the last one, but at least we got one under our belts. We'll do that coming up next here on Jaguars Today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we continue a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. We'll get to the fan feedback question of the day in a moment. 641-1010, the phone number. Mike Dempsey, David Berard, Fat Tony here with you. Thanks. I'll say it now in case we forget to. Thanks to Greg Olson for joining us today on the program. Thanks to Tony Pauline of DraftInsider.net. And, of course, some of the offensive coaches, we get to bring you some of their thoughts today as well, courtesy of their press conferences yesterday. We're hopeful next week, not limited to, but we're trying to track down Todd Wash, Jags defensive line coach, who is now also the running game coordinator.
Yeah.
And as well as Frank Selfo, who goes from being quarterback's coach to senior offensive assistant, I believe is how it's dubbed. And Kelly Skipper, who seems like an absolute ball of fire. I sat after we finish up with Olson. I walked down the hall. He was wrapping up his comments to the assembled media in the press conference room yesterday. And he looks like, give him a couple weeks to get in shape, Tony, he'd strap it up right now. He'd go out there and he'd give it his all. Let's get Isaiah in quickly before we get to the fan feedback spotlight. Hi, Isaiah. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I just want to know, I have a few free agents that I think the Jags should go after. One is Michael Bruce, a right tackle. I know he's near the end of his career, but maybe bring some veteran. And then possibly for a tight end, maybe like a Jordan Cameron or something, since he's not wanting to stay in Cleveland. And then do you think Walter Thurman or Byron Maxwell will be reuniting with Gus this year?
I don't know about how aggressive they're going to be. Was it John Osier who said he wouldn't be surprised if they add another cornerback, Tony?
I mean, it was.
Well, that's going to depend on what they do with Alan Ball, right? I mean, do they bring him back? He's played, when he's been healthy, he's played very well for the Jags over the last couple of years. So I'm not sure about that last one. The other ones, Roos had a season ended with a microfracture surgery.
Yeah.
All right. In week five, he's like 32, 33 years old, and he's said to be contemplating retirement.
Yeah, that R word's floating around right now.
So he, I mean, that is a stopgap of stopgaps type kind of guy. I hope, I'd much rather they go after a Brian Bulaga, who's in his mid-20s while he's had his own injury issues, 7 years younger or so, and he's got a lot more football ahead of him. And I think the same thing with Cameron, Dave. Cameron averaged over 17 yards of catch this year in a very dysfunctional Cleveland situation. But three concussions in two seasons now for him. That's the big question. Does he go the way of Cecil Shorts, where he's able to overcome a couple of concussions? Or does he go the way of LaRon Robinson and one more and he could be out of the league? I think that's a very sticky situation you find yourself in.
It is a troubling situation, and I actually had him on my fantasy team, and I had to drop him because he wasn't being productive enough for me. But He's definitely a guy that is having concussion issues, you know, like an Amendola. He continues to get out there. He continues to go and play. It's just, do you want to take that chance?
Well, maybe you get a little bit of a bargain because of that, right? In terms of, look, when he's healthy, guy has talent. Guy can play.
And there's not much out there at the tight end position. And in a league where there's really just a handful of guys that can give you that kind of player at that position, it's going to be interesting to see what a team is willing to spend on a guy like Jordan Cameron, knowing that. And when you look at the other needs for this roster, we just talked to Tony Pauline looking at free agency. He says that there are some good players at free safety in the draft, but nobody that he would feel good about starting from day one. And when you start looking at free agency and the needs of this football team, how many of those are there in free agency too?
Well, long-term guys are not many, but I'll tell you what, I will take Antrell Roll today. Give me for a short-term plug. That guy never misses a game.
Right.
And he has got as much attitude. And look, is he the best guy out there? Oh, he's 32 years old himself. So his best days are probably behind him. But are his present days better than any other option the Jags have? I think clearly
they
are.
Will he help your secondary out?
Yes. Well, not as much as Devin McCourty, probably.
Right.
But
those are the questions they got to ask, not only about that, but the cornerback position, too. If they can go get Byron Maxwell, it's not like it's going to put this team in a hole to go sign a guy like that, whatever he's going to be asking for in free agency. If they feel like he's better as an option for them than Dwayne Grotz or Alan Ball, and I'm not sure how they feel about that inside this book, but if they do, then heck yeah. You go sign a guy like that, too. You keep adding talent to this roster because you're in a position to do it.
If you can do it to add depth, too, I mean, that just makes your roster that much better. If a guy gets nicked up, hamstrings seem to be a big thing here in town. So if guys go out, you have another guy that can plug in, or you have a guy that can play the nickel position, and now your secondary is feared. Now you have another Legion of Doom type. Secondary.
Well, and we can remind Byron Maxwell all the time Tony hit him in the mouth with a microphone at media.
Sorry
day.
About that, bro.
Sorry.
It wasn't my fault.
He deserved it.
He may have deserved it, as a matter of fact. He was one of the more impressive guys I spoke to that didn't come off. He was certainly confident, all the Seahawks are. Was not way over the line like I thought some of those guys were, and a pretty thoughtful guy as well. Today we asked you to put on your thinking caps, look back. 10 years ago today, and the week leading up to it, Super Bowl 39 was played right here in Jacksonville. I'm sure if you've been a longtime resident of the area, there's probably a time when you never would have imagined that was ever going to be possible. But it did happen, certainly here in Jacksonville. Let's go around the table quickly, and then we'll get some fan feedback on this. Dave, what's your biggest memory or favorite memory from that week?
Well, my favorite memory was just the fact that Jacksonville was a buzz. There was a lot of nightclubs and things you could do. You could see famous people all around town. That was really cool. And so my one famous story was I was in one of the clubs. I think it was like Plush. I don't even know if that's still around. But I had my flip phone because LeBron was in there, and I said, "Hey, LeBron, you mind taking a picture with me?" And I did, but I didn't save it to my phone. So when I closed it back up, if you can imagine that, I closed the phone back up.
There it goes.
It was gone.
Poof.
Unreal.
That was pretty fun, though.
Yeah, you know, for me, that's 10 years ago now. It was really my first exposure to covering Radio Row.
Yeah.
And I can remember I was on the producer side of it more than I was actually down there at the time. But just listening to the energy that is in a room when you have that many of the cream of the crop all-timers in the National Football, it's still my favorite part of going to the Super Bowl every year. That Thursday and Friday on Radio Row is, as a football fan, it's just magic. You know, all those guys in those gold jackets, it's so cool if you're a football fan to listen to it, to be a part of it every year. And 10 years ago here in Jacksonville was my first chance to be around that kind of thing. And I still remember some of the hands I shook that year.
I remember Schefter walking around. I think he might have still been with the Denver Post at the time.
I think he was.
He might not have been with ESPN yet. And, you know, now Schefter's like, you know, you need to get through just a stack of security to get near the guy. You could get anybody being the host city, you know, back then. It was a lot easier doing it then than it is sometimes even now, even though we've been doing it for 10 years. But two things that stood out to me. One, the NFLPA party where Emmitt Smith had announced his retirement that day. I've mentioned this a million times. I got a photo
with Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders, Curtis Martin, Thurman Thomas, Jerome Bettis, all at the same time, all together. It's a lot of rushing yards up on one,
absolutely,
in one little area, and I contributed zero to that pile. But at least I didn't have negative yardage. And then just the day of the game, Dave, it was pretty much crappy weather all week. And Joe Coward and David Lamb and I did a remote at some bar somewhere. There were a bunch of Eagle fans in there.
Mm-hmm.
And this was pretty early in the afternoon. And I was going to soak up everything. So I'm strolling up. They had Bay Street shut down. And just strolling up Bay Street and all the stuff that was going on. I had a guy come up to me, and he had a fan of $100 bills trying to buy my media credential off me. Well, buddy, first of all, you're never going to get in. And see that picture? It ain't you on there, okay? But you know, didn't sell it to him, and just the whole, just it all came together on game day. I thought it was just walking down Bay Street, the however many blocks away I was from the stadium, and just taking it all in. Watch, I mean, there are guys dealing three card money. They're all kind of just weird things that you'd never see, you know, at the same time. And you know, the game was excellent, and you know, I loved it. I thought Jacksonville did a tremendous job. Yeah, it got congested getting around from time to time, but the events were great. Can't do the Phoenix weather sucked. Okay, terrible all week long. Oh, you didn't hear a bunch of stories written about that though. I don't know. Yeah, it seemed like they really harped on that all week long. Tony, what was the feedback we got on Twitter today?
Here's what we got from Robbie. I remember going to see Huey Lewis in the news. Hashtag Back to the Future. From Brock, I was 16 back then, so I'm going to leave this question unanswered. Statute of limitations be damned.
Nice.
From Ryan, hanging around the old Adams Mark Hotel and seeing all the celebrities and famous athletes. And from Brian, said he was living in Eagles country at the time. His favorite Super Bowl 39 memory is the money he made betting on the Pats. Good man. That may be one of my favorite memories, too. Just, I still don't have an Eagles fan that can claim a Super Bowl title, and that is fantastic.
I got a bunch on Facebook as well. A couple of quick ones for you. John said, walking over the Main Street Bridge, he had a brewski or two and dropped his phone in the river. Freaking classic. I'm glad you can look back now. Doug Allen said he was in the halftime show with the legendary Paul McCartney. Three free concerts that they got to experience for taking part in it. Doesn't get any better than that. The rush of running onto the field and feeling the atmosphere firsthand. Let's see. George Weirich said he had just gotten stationed here and did security for the Super the Sports Illustrated party on the beach, and he met Kanye West at the time. He said, knowing how he is now, not a great accomplishment. And Tom Arnold and the greatest quarterback to play the game, Dan the Man Marino. I thought he meant to say David Garrard there, probably. Dustin Smith said, listening to Skip Bayless types talk bad about Jacksonville as they were broadcasting from snow-covered Bristol, Connecticut. Let's see. David Levine said he met Gabrielle Union, literally walked right into her. One of the best moments of my life. That's something you should probably plan out a little bit if you see Gabrielle Union in the vicinity. And Clint said he would go around town with his little brother trying to spot all the celebrities and doing that and just spending that time. And they went out and bought a new camera just for that. And then finally Chris said he saw a guy he knew laying in front of the Modus building who had just gotten the crap beat out of him. Hashtag Jaguars today. So there's that. Dave, good to see you, brother.
Great seeing you guys.
You got a busy I know you're traveling this weekend. Birthday coming up, anniversary coming up. So hopefully we'll have time to catch up with you next week, and we'll delve into more Jaguar football and talk to you then.
Try to make it happen.
All right, there he goes, David Garrard. Thanks again to all our guests today, including Greg Olson, Jaguar offensive coordinator, and Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net. Thanks to Claude Nolan Cadillac. They bring you the show every Friday. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony and David Garrard, and, of course, Donna Murphy popping in today. I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime is next on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.